So today I will try to explain two well-known sutras from Narada Bhakti Sutras. Just a few sutras which give an idea of what will be the characteristics of a devotee who has reached the highest level of devotional experience. So Narada defines bhakti as sattu asmin parama prema rupa. So bhakti or devotion is defined as supreme love for God. The third sutra defines it as something in the form of something which is intrinsic in nature or in the form of immortal bliss, amrutasurupacha. This bhakti, devotion, is divine love. Its essential form is immortality. In its most intrinsic form, it is nothing less than immortal bliss. The fourth sutra says, yellabdhva puman siddho bhavadi, amrdo bhavadi, trupto bhavadi. We are coming to this. Today we will discuss this point. Now, what are the external characteristics of a devotee who has this highest devotional experience? It says, after acquiring this highest supreme devotion, the devotee realizes his perfection and he becomes completely contented. So, truptaha, amrutaha, etc. He becomes perfect, he becomes immortal, and he becomes completely satisfied or contented. And then, after attaining this devotion, he will have no more desire. All these characteristics are given a graphic presentation, interpretation, the 12th chapter. We will come to that later. So, yet prapya na kinjit vanchati na shochati na dveshti na ramade na utsaho bhavati. The one important characteristic of this devotion is that once you have a taste of its experience, once you have a little bit of that experience, you will get a feeling within that there is nothing more to be sought after, nothing more to be acquired. And this is possible only when you get a little bit of the transcendental experience. Normally, in normal human life experiences, when we struggle for getting something in life, we have a strong desire for something, and then when we get it, we feel a kind of a satisfaction. Now, that satisfaction did not exist before you got it. And that satisfaction won't last for long because you will have a desire for more of it. A man who wants wealth, when he gets wealth, he gets a satisfaction. That satisfaction only is due to absence of poverty, of lack of wealth. But when he gets wealthy and rich, he feels a kind of satisfaction, but that is momentary, because next moment he will have a strong desire for more of that wealth. But the wealth cannot satisfy you permanently. So that satisfaction is impermanent. It is temporary. And you won't have the feeling, well, there is nothing more for me to search for, to seek for. No. The more wealth you get, the more you feel the need, the thirst, the desire for more wealth. Now, bhakti is different. When you get a little bit of this bhakti, you feel an inner sense of contentment, and then you won't have any desire for anything else. You will have an inner feeling of satisfaction or conviction. Well, I have got something. There is nothing greater than me that I can ever achieve. This inner contentment is possible only when you get a little bit of that experience. And this is true of jnanam, knowledge also. As we go deeper and deeper in our inner spiritual life, we feel a kind of inner contentment. But it doesn't mean that we become inactive. Very often, this is a major problem when we explain this to a modern audience. See, well, a devotee gets a little bit of the transcendental, advaitic, non-dualistic experience, and then he won't have any desire for anything. Does it mean that he becomes inactive like a stone? See, yesterday, this morning, for example, you find in meditation, spiritual practice, Yatheswaranji was describing the ideal of equipoise, equilibrium, what he called the inner poise of personality. There was a detailed description of this idea. So you become perfectly well established in any kind of inner balance, equipoise. Does it mean that such an advanced spiritual soul doesn't react to situations? He just remains like a stone? Let the world go on like this? No, absolutely different. Because there is a lot of scope for misunderstanding in this concept. Even no less a scholar than Aravindo, the great Aravindo, he had a terrible misunderstanding about Advaita. He said, Shankara's Advaita, Brahman is inactive like a stone. Such absolute rubbish you find in his writings. Why I'm trying to drive home this point, even great scholars have a terrible misunderstanding about this. A devotee who reaches a very high level of spiritual perfection, or a non-dualist who reaches a very high level of spiritual perfection, becomes inactive, becomes unresponsive. He doesn't react to situations, he doesn't do anything, he doesn't do his duty. He just sits as a witness and let the entire world go its way. He has no role to play. That is not the way. In fact, all the great spiritual personalities were hyperactive. All the greatest devotees were hyperactive, more active than common people in this world. And as I said on many occasions earlier, maybe one of the most hardworking human being, I mean in human form, that the world has seen was Shankaracharya, the greatest philosopher of Advaita. And he was perhaps the one who has done maximum amount of physical and intellectual work within a very short lifespan of 32 years. Swamiji, only 39. Sri Ramakrishna, just about 50 years. So you find many of the great spiritual personalities who have either reached a very high level of devotional experience or non-dualistic, mystical experience, have been very active, they reacted to situations, they responded to the needs of their times. They didn't just remain inactive. That's not so. The idea is, they won't be affected by what is happening around us. What is happening around them will not have any disturbing effect on their personality. That's the only difference. Gita makes this point clear. Karmani akarmaye pasyet akarmani cha karmayeha sa buddhiman manusheshu sa yukta krishna karma krut. You find in the Gita, it is one of the most celebrated verses in the Gita, where Krishna says, who is a buddhiman, means a man of wisdom. Yukta, I mean yogi, a spiritual seeker who has reached the highest level of perfection. Yogi. And then buddhiman here means a spiritual seeker of wisdom, somebody who has reached the highest level of spiritual wisdom. Krishna karma krut, a spiritual person who does everything. So these three qualifications are mentioned here. Yogi means any spiritual seeker who has reached the level of identification with the Supreme Soul, with the Universal Consciousness. Krishna Karma means the one who does everything. Buddhiman means an individual of the highest spiritual wisdom. And what are his characteristics? Sri Krishna says, karmani akarmaye pasyet akarmani cha karmayeha. Yeha karmani akarma pasyet and akarmani karma pasyet. Means one who sees action in inaction, inaction in action. Means even he is completely engaged in all his activities, he has got an inner feeling, it's God is the doer of everything. That is the attitude of a devotee. Or if he follows the path of knowledge, if he has reached the level of the highest spiritual wisdom, identity of individual soul and supreme soul, means he has reached the highest Advaitic, non-dualistic realization. He feels, I am the Atman, I am the Self, I am the consciousness, who by its very nature is not affected by any action, not engaged in action. But then, with that full consciousness, he is actively involved in his duties and responsibilities. So akarmani cha karmayeha, karmani akarmaye pasyet akarmani cha karmayeha. So in action, he experiences inaction. Because even when he is hyperactive, he has the feeling that is the Atman which is free from all this action. And he is able to see action in action also. He is able to see inaction in action and action in inaction. So if he is keeping quiet, doing nothing, he doesn't feel that he is inactive. Because only his body and mind may be inactive. So the idea of action, the idea of inaction are related to human body, mind, intellect and so on, not to Atman. So this is possible for the highest devotee who is always acting, working, but with a strong conviction, God is the doer of everything. Sri Ramakrishna repeats this idea in Gospel many times. God is the only doer, God is the only actor. Such terms you find in the gospel. So we should not think that a devotee or a man or a spiritual seeker who has reached the highest level of wisdom, man or woman, whoever may be, is physically or intellectually inactive. He won't be inactive. Holy Mother is an example. Holy Mother was always active, doing things for the good of others, or spiritual disciples. So, in this fifth sutra, Narada says, "Yat prapyana kinchid vanchati." So that devotee, after attaining the highest supreme love for God, he has no desire for anything. And na shochati na dveshti, he is free from grief and is free from hatred, and na ramate, he doesn't rejoice it doesn't mean that he never had a feeling of enjoyment. In fact, Bhagavata Purana is very, very vocal in giving the description of the psychological, the emotional condition of a devotee. Nityotsavam bhavatesham nityasri nityamangalam. For a real devotee of God, the whole life is a kind of celebration. If your whole life is a celebration, then you don't feel the need to rejoice on a particular occasion. Because the whole life is a celebration. You feel you're a devotee of God. So why should you be miserable? So you feel you are the devotee of God. So why should you grieve? And if you don't grieve, if you have no special occasion for grief, you have no special occasion for rejoicing also. Because whole life becomes a kind of picnic, spiritually speaking, a kind of celebration. Nityotsavam bhavatyesham, nityasri, nityamangalam. That's it. Every moment becomes a kind of inner experience of the closeness of God. So that's the idea behind. And then that devotee goes beyond all kinds of dualities, all kinds of pains and grief and jubilation and all the dual forms of emotional excitement. Head becomes completely satisfied. These characteristics are outlined in a more graphic style in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. There, Lord Krishna gives a long list, one after another, he gives a long list of the characteristics of an ideal devotee. We have to remember, these characteristics are true of the highest Advaitic experience, non-dualistic experience, through the path of jnanam, and it is true of the highest experience of supreme love for God in bhakti yoga, and it is also true of a spiritual seeker who has reached perfection and steadiness of wisdom, as explained in the second chapter called the attributes or characteristics of Siddha Prajna, means Siddha Prajna Lakshanani. In the second chapter, you find from 55th verse to 72nd verse, 18 verses, Lord Krishna gives a long list of different characteristics of a spiritual seeker who has reached the highest level of steadiness in wisdom and knowledge and equipoise. And it means a perfectly balanced personality. So, a yogi, a bhakta, a siddha prajna, they all belong to the same category. They all have more or less the same attributes and characteristics. So, from 13th verse onwards, Lord Krishna gives a long list of the characteristics of a devotee of the highest type. So, Advaishta Sarvabhudanam Maitra Karuna Evaja Nirmamo Nirahankaraha Samadukha Sukhakshami Sandushta Satadam Yogi Yatatma Dhrinisega Mayyarpida Manobuddhi Yoman Bhaktastami Priyaha. These are the 13th and 14th verse. The first characteristic of an ideal devotee is the Sarvabhudanam Advaishta. He can't hate anyone. That is the first characteristics. So spirituality is as abstract as Brahman or Atman. But spirituality, though we cannot define spirituality, we know what spirituality is not. That much we can easily understand. So whenever or wherever you find any religious concept which divides mankind into two conflicting groups of believers and non-believers, and wherever you find a picture of an angry, uncompromising, absolutely tyrannical God, that is not a spiritual concept. Because, and again, wherever you find anyone in either religious life dividing humanity into two groups, well, there may be everything, but not spirituality. So that's why Lord Krishna says the first characteristic of an individual, of one who has reached spiritual wisdom, is that sarvabhudanam advesta. He has a sense of friendliness. He has no enmity towards anyone, towards all in the world. And this includes not only human beings, the entire creation. That's the idea behind. As I said earlier, in Vedantic philosophy and also in devotional philosophy, in Vedantic tradition, also in devotional tradition, the creator and creation are one. You find this in the Taittiriya Upanishad. There is a famous verse. It is almost, it can be considered to be the Upanishadic version of the Genesis. In the beginning there was word, a word was God, and so on, and God created all beings and breathed his soul, the nostrils of man. Almost like that you find here in the Taittiriya Upanishad. You find Saha kamayeda bahusyam prajayeti satapovatapyeda sadabastaptua idam sarvamasrijada tatrishtva tadeva anupravisha tadanupravisha satchatecha abhavat. You find a long passage. I have just quoted a small portion of it. So God willed, that's the idea behind. Let me become many. So God is the efficient cause and God himself becomes the world. So the efficient cause and the material cause of creation, both, is God only. But then this can be made, this can be said in a straight statement. But Upanishad gives a graphic presentation. So it says, the world was created, and after creating, God entered the world and became one with the creation. It means creation and creator are the same. This is true in devotional philosophy and also in Vedanta Advaitic philosophy. So, if everything, every living being is an expression of God, and if you are yourself a devotee of God, how can you have enmity towards anybody or anything in this world? So that is the metaphysical justification behind this idea. The first characteristic of an ideal devotee is that sarvabhudanam advesta, mean he will have no enmity, no hatred, no hostile feeling towards anything or anybody in the world. Because he sees the expression of the divine principle everywhere. This can be, well, you know, this such an idea can have scope for many types of speculations. You have to live in this world. Is this possible for you to see the divine, the presence of the divine, the presence of God in all living beings? Again, we can refer to the life of Sri Ramakrishna. So there is a special reason why I am referring to Sri Ramakrishna. Because this you find in the lives of many other great spiritual personalities also. But Sri Ramakrishna is very close to us in from the point of time. See, in course of his spiritual sadhana, he reached a point where he found it impossible to collect flowers from flower plants. For puja, he had to collect the tulasi leaves, bilwa leaves, all these, you know, for rituals, for the puja in the temple. But at one point of time, when he reached the highest level of that unity with the Divine Mother, he found the presence of Divine Mother in the flowers. which he was about to pluck for doing puja. So he stopped it altogether. So everything was found to be an expression of the divine principle, which means this is possible at the metaphysical level, but for a spiritual aspirant, a feeling of universal brotherhood, this is something which one should cultivate to evolve to higher and higher level of devotional life. Then, of course, this is with regard to our attitude towards other beings. Sarvabhudanam adveshta. Maitraha, karuna, means, maitra means you are friendly with everyone and you are compassionate towards all. So no enmity towards anyone, but perfect friendliness and compassion towards the whole creation. Now, with regard to one's attitude towards oneself, nirmamaha nirakankaraha. Now, such a devotee, he will have no feeling of I or mine. Well, I am this, this is mine. This feeling will be completely absent in an ideal devotee. This is with regard to his own personality. So, with regard to his attitude towards other living beings, he will be compassionate, he will be friendly, and he will have no enmity towards anybody or anything in this world. And with regard to his own personality, he will be completely free from any kind of ego, any kind of feeling that this I am the doer and all these things are mine. Because he will not have the sense of I. That also, this point is further elaborated in the gospel. Sri Ramakrishna says, if you feel this I, then try to think that all the world is yours. So this is called the I of the superior type. All this you find idea behind. So as we evolve and expand ourselves in devotional life, the small I becomes the bigger, the greater I. So here the teacher of Gita says that an ideal devotee will have no feeling of his own individual ego. And then samadukha sukhakshami, mean he will be able to forbear both pain and pleasure with the same equipoise, the equanimity of mind. This comes through the feeling that everything is an act of God. See, when we identify ourselves, our own personality, with the events around us, then we find it difficult to look upon pain and pleasure with the same attitude. But when you look at pain and pleasure from a transcendental point of view, then you understand pain is another kind of pleasure and pleasure is another kind of pain. These are only words. Actually, the reality is beyond pain and pleasure. This is possible for an Advaiti, for a non-dualistic seeker, and this is possible for a devotee. Because a devotee can very easily say everything is given by God. Devotee has got one advantage, as I mentioned earlier. It is a very easy path. And you don't have to struggle much at the beginning. You don't have to give up something which you were practicing earlier. What you do, all your natural human emotions, feelings, tendencies and attitudes are given a spiritual orientation, a kind of spiritual sublimation. That's what a devotee does. So human relationships are sublimated to a higher level of spiritual relationship. At that level, you'll be able to see pain and pleasure with the same equanimity of mind. And that is a sign of a mature personality. So perfect spiritual personality, perfect integrated personality is the result of spiritual growth. I can refer to this, in this context, I can refer to what we are reading this morning. You know, Yati Sriranji was referring to psychologists. And some conflicts and complexes. Now, you find even the greatest of psychologists who have taken PhDs in behavioral psychology, who can write books, volumes on how to interact with other social beings around you, how to evolve yourself into an integrated personality. But even the greatest of behavioral psychologists are found to be eccentric and abnormal in human in behavior, you find. This is very often found. Suppose you get the full theoretical knowledge of how to behave, how to act, how to talk, and you may be the most qualified behavioral psychologist or psychiatrist or counselor in the world. But in your own behavior, you are not able to become integrated personalities. Many behavioral psychologists, psychiatrists are eccentrics. Maybe because of their association with patients, whatever may be. Now, my question is, if your theoretical knowledge of psychology and psychiatry cannot enable you to become integrated personalities, it means your own mind is not within your control. See, if you are a computer expert, you can very easily make the computer function according to your will. If you are an engineer, you can very easily make a machine function according to your will. But your own mind, you cannot control the way you control a machine or a computer. Means mind is something more than that. So perfect equanimity, a perfectly integrated personality is the result of spiritual enlightenment. It may be either through the path of devotion or the path of knowledge. In devotion, if you can look upon conflicts and stress and tension and all this as the gift of God, then you are able to look at pain and pleasure with the same equanimity of mind. It doesn't mean that you should not react to it, or you should not respond to it, or you should run away from it, or you should just remain as a stone. No, that's not what I mean. One can avoid stress and tension and anxiety if you follow the path of devotion, or if you follow the path of wisdom, knowledge also. So that is the idea begins, samadukha sukhakshami. In fact, you know, this is also given as one of the definitions of an integrated personality in modern psychiatry and psychology. But this is possible only through evolution to a higher level of mental consciousness. Then another characteristic, and it's very important, sandushtaka. Satatam Yogi, we already mentioned this, Arada already mentioned this, Santushta means. As I said, when you feel that there is nothing more for you to achieve, that feeling is called Santushta means. It is not satisfaction, otherwise Tushta would have been enough. Samyak Tushta means somebody. Some Upasarga reinforces the meaning, means one who has a perfect who is perfectly contented. That's what it means. So, santushtaka satadam, always contented. This contentment is also another important prerequisite for developing an integrated personality. Contentment. Because it is this contentment which causes anxiety, depression, conflicts, obsession, all the schizophrenia at higher levels. Melancholy, all these problems are the antithesis of santushti, contentment. And then how does a devotee achieve this level of contentment, inner contentment? By developing the conviction that everything is the gift of God. As Sri Ramakrishna says in the Gospel, you know, not a blade of grass moves without his will. His means or her will, you know, Divine Mother's will, both we can say. That's what Sri Ramakrishna says. Without God's will, without Divine Mother's will, without her will, nothing happens in this world. Now, can a devotee who has developed this strong conviction be grief-stricken? Can such a devotee be discontented or dissatisfied? Not possible. That devotee will be the very embodiment of an integrated personality. Then yogi is always in a, is common expression, always the feeling his mind is associated or joined with God in that sense. So satatam yogi is always in a contemplative mode. Through this contemplation, he mentally unites himself with God. That is yogi. Yatatma, one who has completely controlled his mind. And of course, such a devotee will have his senses also under perfect control. His or her senses under perfect control. So this is also possible. So a devotee who has controlled his mind or her mind will have her or his senses as well under perfect control. That is the idea behind it. Because the conviction that everything is the will of God gives the devotee the feeling that everything happens because of God. So the devotee won't be bothered about the fluctuations, the conflicts at the mental level. And the senses also will be naturally drawn towards God. Where he will be always dwelling at a higher plane. When the devotee thinks that everything happens because of God's will, then naturally God will take the center stage in his contemplation and speculations. So naturally, the devotee's mind and senses will be drawn towards God. Dhridhanischeha means the devotee will have an iron will, a strong determination. Yesterday, we already discussed the story of Dhruva. I just gave a general outline. But one point I want to emphasize. Say, yesterday I said, you know, Dhruva was walking through the forest and the grey sage Narada came. Narada felt, he was exclaiming to himself, he felt great admiration for the boy. He said, Aho teja kshatriyanam balohi. See, I mean, this is a small boy and still what a strong determination. He's walking through the dense forest in search of God. So let me go and test him. Then Narada tried to dissuade Dhruva from his determination. Why do you worry? You are a small boy. And these domestic problems and conflicts are natural in family life. If your stepmother or your father didn't treat you well, why should that hurt you? These things happen. And again Narada makes another point. All these things are because of previous karma phala. Now these are, you know, Narada is trying to give a kind of justification so that you can be active. See, that's a great lesson for all devotees. Devotees who feel that everything because of the past, let us do nothing and simply remain quiet. And the story of Dhruva is a revelation, should be a kind of eye-opener to those devotees. Dhruva doesn't feel like he's an old man, a renowned sage advising me, so let me go back to my palace. Dhruva doesn't do that. Dhruva says, no, what you are saying is perfectly all right from your point of view, but my heart, my mind is hurt and I won't go back to my palace. I won't go back to my home without attaining the goal for which I left my palace. That's the determination which Dhruva shows. Narada actually wanted to test whether Dhruva has got the right mental equipment, integrity, courage, determination, all that, which Narada was trying to test the boy. When Narada found that Dhruva was, Dhruva meant business, to use a modern language, Dhruva didn't want to go back before attaining his goal. Then Narada actually admired him, congratulated him, and then he instructed Dhruva on spiritual practice. And Dhruva followed his instructions, and in 6 months, he realized God. He got a vision of God. That's what the Bhagavata Purana says. Again, if you want to refer, you can refer to the fourth Skandha Bhagavata, eighth to twelfth chapter, five chapters dealing with Dhruva Vakhyana, the story of Dhruva. If you don't want to, you can't read the original, you may read the story in Sister Niveda's famous book, The Cradle Tales of Hinduism, an English book, where Sister Nivedita gives a graphic description of the story of Dhruva, the cradle tales of Hinduism. Now, so that is Dhruva Nishchaya, means a devotee should be a person of strong will, that devotee should have a strong determination. Because there will be obstacles from external world and there will be obstacles from internal world. Mind will sometimes dissuade you, lethargy, laziness, procrastination, postponing, and so on. Mind will sometimes give false justification for discontinuing spiritual practices. So there also, an iron will, a strong determination is a must. And sometimes external surroundings, the place where you are living, or the people whom you have to associate with, may create problems and obstacles. There also you need a strong will to confront those problems. So devotional life or spiritual life cannot succeed without the aid of a strong will, a personality of strong determination. So mayyarpita mano buddhi yomad bhakta samay priyaka. So such a devotee will have surrendered is mind and intellect to me. That's what Lord Krishna says. Then in the 15th verse, Lord Krishna says another very important characteristic of every devotee. That is to give a graphic picture of his personality as he is viewed by the outer world. Yasmanu dijade lokaha, lokanu dijade chayaha, harsamashabhayodvekaihi, muktoyas sachame priyaha. So here two aspects are given. How the world looks upon him and how he looks upon the world. One. Second point is how he reacts to situations in his life. From these two angles, the characteristics of an ideal devotee are explained here. Now, that devotee won't cause any fear or anxiety to anyone by his behavior. He won't feel any anxiety. Sometimes you feel there are some great spiritual personalities in whose presence you feel free, you feel a natural relaxation, you feel calmness and tranquility. And there are certain people in whose presence we feel confusion. Their behavior and words will create more confusion, may make our mental condition much worse than what it was. So both type of people you find in this world. The ideal devotee, because of his equipoise, equanimity of mind, he causes no fear to anyone. And no one can frighten the devotee either. Nobody can cause fear to him. And he himself won't do anything deliberately to cause fear or anxiety to anyone. So this is the inner and outer personality of an ideal devotee. So how he reacts to the external world and how the external world reacts to him, both are explained here. A devotee won't do or say or do anything either mentally or physically, which causes fear to anyone. And nothing in this world can shake him, nothing in this world can cause fear and anxiety to him. And again, he is completely free from agitation, agitation of moods. So, either extreme enjoyment, euphoria or jubilation, anger, excitement, or too much of pain and grief, sorrow and so on. He will be completely free from all this. In fact, you find all these are characteristics of what they call an integrated personality. He is able to react to external world with perfect equanimity of mind. And the psychological foundation for this balanced personality is the inner poise that the devotee has developed by his own spiritual practice. So, the equanimity of mind expresses itself externally as integrated personality in its reaction to external world. In the second chapter, elsewhere, Lord Krishna makes another very important point. Krishna says, you have to work in the world. And normally, that's the main problem with people generally ask again and again. Now, all these are great ideas which one should try to develop, no doubt. But how can we practice these ideals along with an active, busy life? How can we combine action and contemplation? How can we practice all these great spiritual virtues? In modern world, a world in which we have to be active and we should be active with a purpose, with a definite goal and motive in mind. In the second chapter, Sri Krishna gives a solution to this problem. You have to work. But see, no one can remain inactive physically and mentally at the same time. Even for a split second, you cannot be inactive. Physically, if you are inactive, mentally you will be active. Hi nahi kasikshanamabi jadu dishthati akarmakrit. Karyadehi avashak karma sarvak pragadijayihi gunaihi. This is more related to karma yoga, but is very relevant to the attitude that a devotee should develop. A practitioner of the path of devotion should develop. So he says, Nahi kasikshanamabi jadu dishthati akarmakrit. See, you can never remain inactive mentally and physically at the same time. Not even for a split second. Now, if you do not deliberately try to practice action without attachment, you will be forced to work with attachment. Because action is inevitable. Karya dekhi avasya, avasya means helpless. Even if you are sitting in an easy chair doing nothing physically, your mind will be speculating and dreaming and thinking. That is also action. Lord Krishna classifies this also as action, as much as physical action. Because even a flashing thought in your mind is as effective in registering its impression in our memory as the most spectacular demonstrative action. With regard to the impression it leaves in mind, there is no difference between a split second, a split moment thought and an action which takes you, which requires several days. There is no difference. So, Lord Krishna says, if you don't work as a karma yogi, either with the help of devotion, surrendering the fruits of action to God, the results of action to God, or through non-dualistic, non-attachment. If you don't do that, you will have to work as a slave. If you don't try to work as a master with non-attachment, you will be forced to work as a slave with the chain of attachment all around you. That's what Lord Krishna says. So he gives a solution. So he says, Yogastha kuru karmani sangam tektva dhananjaya siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva samattam yoga uchyate. So you do work, but yogastha means with a sense of equanimity, with perfect contemplation. And how does this contemplation reflect in our attitude in action? Siddhya siddhyo samo bhutva. Be detached. Remember, detachment doesn't imply either complacency, indifference, or negligence. Not at all. Detachment or action without attachment never implies complacency, negligence, or indifference. That's a very important point which Lord Krishna emphasizes in the Gita. So to drive home this point, in another chapter, Lord Krishna says, the difference between a devotee who works without attachment, a devotee who mentally surrenders the fruits of his or her action to God, and another ordinary man who is a slave of workaholism, who cannot remain inactive for a minute. What is the difference between these two? So Krishna says, the difference is only with regard to attitude. A devotee is also active, but he is working as a master because he has surrendered the fruits, the results of his or her action to God. So he feels free. And this is true of a karma yogi, and this is true of a jnani also. Whether you follow the path of devotion, path of knowledge, or path of rajyoga, anyone, whatever may be, it is true of all great spiritual seekers in their action, in the field of action. So, a devotee works with the same enthusiasm, with the same zeal, efficiency, and with the same level of dedication and devotion and application as the man who works, who is a workaholic, who is working 24 hours, full of desire, with a strong motivation, encouraged by incentives, by the results of his action. So naturally he would be very enthusiastic because he has a strong motive, he has a strong determination, he has a definite goal to achieve, but he is full of desire, he completely attached his action and also to the result of his action. Naturally he would be very enthusiastic, very efficient, without sparing himself. And the devotee also works with the same efficiency, with the same dedication, application, and zeal. But the devotee will be completely non-attached. The devotee will be free from all kinds of attachment. That's the only difference. So, sattaha karmani avidvamso yatha kurvanti bharata kuryad vidvan tatha asaptaha sikishuhu loka sangraham. This is the sloka. Saktaha karmanya vidvamso idha kurvanti bharata. This test, sakta means those who attach to work and attach results of work, full of identification, full of desire, with a strong motive, with a strong desire, with a strong sense of goal to be achieved. So naturally he will put all that he has got into his work. Now, with the same spirit, the same efficiency, the same level of application are displayed by the devotee also. But the devotee will be detached. That's idea. Kuryan vidvan tatha asakta. With the word vidvan used here, the vidvan should be understood to mean as a person who knows the technique of action without desire, either karma yoga or a devotee who has surrendered his or her results to God mentally. That's the idea. So, with regard to efficiency, zeal and enthusiasm, perfectionism as we call it, result orientation. In all these matters, a devotee is not inferior to the most motivated worker in the world. Only he will be, mentally he will be non-attached. That's the point here. So, now such a devotee will be free from, so harsha amashayoho mukta means that the devotee will be completely free from harsha amashayo dvegai muktoya sachame priyaha. He will be completely free from agitation of the moods caused by either too much of anger when the results are not up to the expectation, or jubilation when the results are more than the expectation. He will be free from euphoria, anger, excitement, grief and so on. So he can avoid anxiety neurosis when he is working, and he can avoid depression if the results are not up to the expectation. So in both ways a devotee gains. So it is a very profitable trade to be a devotee, to be a karma yogi. That's what Lord Krishna means. It is, anyone can practice it with great advantage and great profit also. Because mostly when people work hard with too much of attachment and desire, by the time they get reach their goal, they will be psychologically incapable of enjoying whatever they have worked for. Either they'll be suffering from depression, melancholy, schizophrenia and so on. They'll be incapable of enjoying the results of the work they have put up. So, but a devotee is free from all this. And then another important characteristic is given the 16th verse. Anapekshaka sujir dakshaka udasino gatavyataha sarvarambha parityagi yomad bhaktasame priyaka. Now, this devotee will be completely free from desire, desireless. Suchiki means he will be pure in his mind, intellect, everything. He will give surrender to God. He is contemplating on God all the time. He considers himself to be an instrument in the hands of God. Yesterday I gave a long description of the ideal of prapatti and the Abhyasa Yoga as expounded by Prahlada. Sevanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevana. So the 6 points of prapatti, Anugulyasya Sankalpaka, Pradigulyasya Varjanam, etc. So all these should be kept in mind in understanding this 16th verse. So, suchi. Naturally, such a devotee will be suchi, he will be pure. And dakshaka. Daksha means samarthaka, means efficient, capable of doing things. The daksha. So that's the point. So a devotee is very efficient, as efficient in action as the most dedicated workaholic professional. That's what it means. Udasinaha. Udasina means mentally he will not be attached to the results of his action, etc. Gatavyataha. And he will be completely free from any worry, because at the time of doing work he will be free from anxiety, because he has surrendered everything to God. And after work, if the results are up to the expectation, he will not be overjoyed. And if the results are not up to the expectation, he will not be worried. So he will be free from anxiety, neurosis, depression and all the problems which are normally associated with modern workaholic culture. Now we have enough time for about 25 minutes. If I got any points to be clarified, question and answer session, we can ask. We'll try to discuss this in open session. 25 minutes we have got. Yes?
These are two profound statements, like that is action in action.
Oh, yeah.
He sees action in action, inaction in action.
Yes. No, its metaphysical foundation is Advaita. So it has got a long, elaborate commentary from Shankaracharya. But that's true of a devotee, of a yogi, of anyone. Because a spiritual seeker who has reached the highest Advaitic experience will be free from attachment. He can never do anything with desire. And a devotee also will have no desire. So that's the idea.
again, Maharaj, Sarvati Sakshibhutam, we are this attribute to God or the Spirit.
Yes.
So there seems to be some kind of overlap in these statements. Sarvati Sakshibhutam, Bhavatitam, Trigunadaitam. Again, we go back and say, see, it's action in action.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I shall explain this point right now. Now, Brahman is, of course, Brahman is beyond definition, beyond explanation, beyond description. But all the Upanishads, all the Shastras explain Brahman. So Shastras themselves say that Shastras are unsuccessful attempts to explain the inexplicable. That is the Upanishads themselves called. Anyway, I will come to that. Your idea is, if Brahman is or Atman is beyond action, how can Atman be called Krishna Karma Krut? Is it so?
Yes,
the one which does everything. Well, that is true. Atman doesn't do anything. But without Atman's presence in you, you cannot drink a glass of water. You cannot sit. You cannot exist. Atman itself is not the actor. But without Atman's the presence of consciousness, there is no action possible in this world. Action is nothing but a manifestation of the presence of Atman through the media of action. You see, Atman is omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, and so on. It's free from any kind of involvement in any action, Atman, soul. But without the presence of this Chaitanya, this consciousness, there can be nothing in this world. Does it mean that Atman is sitting there, Atman is walking, Atman is playing football? No. But without Atman, nothing is this, none of these things are possible. That's why Sri Ramakrishna is not a blade of grass moves without his will. He means God. In fact, it's just that idea. Atman or soul of the self is beyond everything. But at the same time, without it, there can be no action in this world. Without the presence of Chaitanya, there can be no movement, no thought, no action, nothing. So in that sense, it's called Krishna Karma Krut. So a highest devotee or highest Advaitin feels that everything takes place either by God's will, in the case of a devotee, or everything is possible because of the consciousness, Atman, according to Advaita. Important to see.
Maharaj, you mentioned that one of the, in one sentence you said one of the aspects of a good devotee is a strong-willed person.
Yes.
And the very next sentence you said was surrendered in mind and body. How do those go together?
Yes. Now, a devotee who has surrendered himself to God's will, but who is wavering and who is shaky, will not be able to remain in that condition of surrender unless he has a strong will. See, that's the, you can, the most classic example is Girishandra Ghosh. That's yesterday we were mentioning. Now, Girishandra Ghosh had many extraordinary qualities. He had many vices. But one was, he was a man of deep integrity. He didn't promise anything which he knew very well he can't practice. Second, he was a man of strong will. He was fully convinced that Sri Ramakrishna had taken over his responsibility. That conviction was very strong. This strong conviction is not possible without strong will. That's why you find all great devotees automatically become men or women of strong will. Mirabai is an example, say lady, you know. Or many of the great Christian saints of Teresa, Saint Teresa, all you find. They had to face a lot of obstacles and problems. They had to confront a lot of problems. But still they were not deterred, they were not shaken by all this. So how do you explain this? At the same time, they'll be praying all the time. On the one hand, a sense of surrender. Yesterday I explained this prapatti, saranagati, all in day to week, cannot repeat. See, that surrender, the sense of surrender, in fact, strengthens your will instead of weakening your will. The surrender doesn't make you a tool of fatalism. It is not fatalism. Everything because of God will, so I have nothing to do. No, no. That is just the antithesis of it. See, a weak man very often tries to interpret whatever philosophy he gets from his angle. So very often, you know, self-surrender can be, and very often wrongly interpreted as fatalism. No. In fact, all great spiritual personalities, not Advaitins only, but also great devotees, were men or women of great strong will and determination. They had to face a lot of problems. Take Siddhamakshana. In fact, the most recent example is Siddhamakshana, because he lived very close to our own times. See, Siddhamakshana had to face a lot of problems and always praying to mother. Always, you know, the songs I find, everything is mother's will. People think they are doing, but it's mother who is doing everything. Singing all these songs, Siddhamakshana still was a man of very strong will. People tried to put many obstacles before him. He could not be shaken. So how do you please? So real surrender gives you strong will and determination. But it would be a spiritually oriented will, spiritually oriented determination. That's the main difference. So, any?
Swami, could you explain, maybe give an example of, you were talking about forbearing through pain and pleasure, but then you said that pain is another kind of pleasure and pleasure is another kind of pain.
Yes. Now, in fact, such devotees go beyond both pain and pleasure. See, pain is a pain when you differentiate it from pleasure. Pleasure is pleasure when you differentiate it from pain. But suppose you develop such an equanimity of mind when your mind goes beyond both, you won't see much difference. See, yesterday we were referring to one story in the Gospel where Siddhamakshana narrates a story of a great ascetic, a devotee. He was robbed, he was beaten, and they thought some robbers caught hold of him, thinking he was a rich man, then nothing. Then he was tortured and he left behind. Then after some time, some other good people came, saved him, dressed him, fed him with milk. So somebody asked, who is feeding you with milk? The same people who tortured me are feeding me with milk. That's what now means that devotee had gone beyond both. So that is the idea behind. It's called, you know, if I dundvatito vimatsaraha, said later you find here, means going beyond duality, going beyond opposite pairs, going beyond cold and heat, beyond pain and pleasure, going beyond loss and gain, like that. It means transcending the mind beyond and going beyond both. That's the idea. Yes.
Swami, you mentioned that the English word transcendental knowledge that you use, what does that mean? And how is it related to a Sanskrit word?
The word transcendental means, transcending means going beyond, exceeding, soaring above. That word perhaps is not the best way to translate Sanskrit. Atintriya is called. The word Atintriya is often translated as transcendental in relation to the empirical, which is Atintriya means going beyond the level of sensory perception. That is what Atindriya means in Sanskrit, in English. Now, transcendental, the word transcendental can't in critique of pure reason and all, I find. Transcendental is something with that which goes beyond empirical. So, in Sanskrit, empirical is indriya, indriya janya, and adindriya is transcendental. So, that's the best way to translate. Now, the absolute knowledge and absolute supreme devotion, both are transcendental. Both are transcendental. Because both beyond the realm of sensory perception or sensory experience. That's the idea behind transcendental love, transcendental devotion. Will and desire.
Yes, the question of will and that question I have is, what is the basic difference between will and desire?
Oh, yes. Will, you know, will may be or may not be associated with the desire. So, you know, in Sanskrit, we have a few terms like atamayada, aikshada, aichada, such terms are translated into English as willed. Now, God willed. Such expressions are used in English translations of Upanishadic statements also. Suppose you use the word God desired, means God had something to gain by that. He was looking for something, so he wanted something. But will doesn't necessarily imply imperfection or lack of something or desire for something. Though in human parlance it may be, but not in the in mystical literature, biblical, even in biblical literature also. So, will is sometimes used as a kind of an action, involuntary action. See, this world itself is sometimes explained as the result of God's will. This is very commonly found in English translations of Advaitic books. This world is the result of God's will. Now, the subject is discussed in many Upanishad passages. If I refer to that, the point will be clear to you. Now, if God desired something, and to achieve that desire, He created this world, that would imply that God is imperfect. God also wants something as you and many of us want. So, here the will is used in the sense, just as you breathe in and breathe out, you don't want to breathe in and breathe out. It is a kind of involuntary action. So, this is the language in which Srishti or creation is explained in Vedic, Vedantic and Upanishadic literature. That's the idea behind. In the Mundaka Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka and Chandogya, in many of these Upanishads you find long descriptions, long expositions on the mystery of creation. Is creation the result of an action on the part of God, a deliberate, contemplated action on the part of God? If you put it that way, well, in that case, God is as imperfect as any human being. He wants to do something, so He did. So, it is explained as God's will. Icha, the word icha. That icha means not be taken in an action with desire. Just as you breathe in, these words are uchoch, swasochwasava, means just breathing and breathe out. So, to explain this point, Vedanta scriptures give the analogy of a king who practices violin in his own court. Rajnyaha veena vadanadivad, this means. Suppose a king who is an amateur musician practices violin in his own court. maybe an empty court, there are no courtiers, he won't be very much excited, he won't be anxious to put up a good performance. He can be very free with his own court. Suppose the king invites a professional musician like you, and that the musician plays in the open court. I mean, anyone, for example. The musician will be very anxious to put up a very good performance, because if he puts a poor performance, he won't get any reward. He may be even punished. Now, that is the difference shown between God's creating this world and human action with desire. Human action with desire is like the playing of a violin by a professional musician who is invited to the court, who has to be very careful about playing. But God's creating this world is compared to the king himself playing the same violin in his own court. He doesn't have to bother about pleasing anybody. Nothing, no reward, no punishment. So God has nothing to gain by creating this world. It's involuntary action, motiveless, desireless action. That's the idea. I use the word, you know, it is not, I mean, he was using a language, an expression, that's all. Strong determination. Because in spiritual life also, you will have to confront problems and obstacles. And to be able to get over them, you need a strong will, an iron will. So you, if you read the lives of any of the great spiritual personalities, you find one important characteristic, these two. One is, they had the sense of inner contentment. Second is, a strong will. Without that, they would have been crushed, because all great spiritual personalities had to face obstacles one way or other. So, yes.
Thakur was attached to God, and in his period of sadhana, he had a lot of anxiety to meet, to get the vision of a mother. So, attachment from that point of view also.
Yes. No, Sri Ramakrishna says, madness is not a very desirable thing. But madness for God is something wonderful. That Sri Ramakrishna says the point. Doesn't mean that madness is something which everyone should acquire. So madness for God, you find in all great spiritual persons, you find madness for God. Mad love for God. That's a transcendental. That's why I said, all human emotions which normally at empirical level create problems will function as fuel, as momentum, as a power of momentum for taking you to the higher level of spiritual life. That's the sublimation of human relations. That is what we find in knowledge.
So, Swami,
you
one more question I have. It's like more related to the portions that you explained, that as we go into bhakti, as we go into devotion, we tend to lose all our kind of anger, violence, all those kind of forms transcend a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, for example, once I'm out of this, say for example, this victory, then we go back to our workplace.
Yes.
We are in a very competitive environment where we have cutthroat competition, and we have people belonging to across, they would be people completely different from the way we kind of think. So the question is that how do we, because at times when you are too docile, you are just too quiet.
Yes.
You can be overridden. So how
yes.
does the bhakta or how does the devotee in these kind of time, in this kind of circumstances, bear with the world and yet succeed in his whatever work he has to do, because he cannot move away from his work, but at the same time be at it?
Yes. You know, one solution was given by Yatishwaranandaji Ji in that portion of the book Meditation and Spiritual Practice that we read yesterday. So Yatishwaranandaji Ji suggests that we must try to establish a connecting link between the spiritual impressions that we acquire through daily meditation morning and evening, and also the rest of the lifetime. That's one way. So constant reading or occasional thinking or contemplating on these spiritual ideas will help us to remember the higher and keep our mind at a higher level of consciousness. Now, with when it comes to competitiveness or workaholism and all these, you know, a devotee need not be indifferent or negligent or complacent. No, it should not be. If you see, if you are a devotee of God, you should try to excel in everything. That should be. See, God is the embodiment of the highest degree of excellence in everything. So if you are a genuine devotee, you can't be mediocre. So that way you can associate with the virtues of a professional, like efficiency, competitiveness, and God. If you read the Gospel in the Gita, 11th chapter and 10th chapter, read these two, you will understand that everything that is grand and great and beautiful and sublime in this world is an expression of God's glory. Yadyat vibhudimasattvam srimadujitameva tattadeva avagachattvam mama tejomsa sambhavam. These two chapters should be read together. So Lord Krishna says, wherever you find any kind of greatness, a spark of greatness, beauty or charm, its origin is God's glory. Don't think it is God himself. This is all absurd. It should not be. Be very careful. The idea is, all that is great and glorious and sublime and beautiful, in its highest degree of perfection, originates from the glory of God. So, a devotee need not be complacent. He need not be mediocre. He need not be indifferent or negligent. He need not fail anything because he is a devotee. Because he is a devotee, he should be greater than those who are not devotees. So this is the idea behind. This is a Vedanti concept, of course.
So, extending the question, so there is one aspect which is to do whatever you are doing in as best as you can. But the second part is, for example, we are working to earn a salary or gain something from it. How do you kind of, from a thought process perspective, separate out the desire versus what you think? Like Sri Krishna says, when you go to a store, you have to ask what you should get.
Yes, yes. Now, no, if you, the best way to find a solution to this problem is to read the lives of great spiritual personalities and try to understand how they reacted. You take any of the great person, whether the teacher of Bhagavad Gita or the great Shankaracharya who commented, who interpreted, or Sri Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, Mother, anybody you take, fine. No, on the one hand, they were the embodiments of the highest spiritual virtues. On the other hand, they were very realistic in their interaction with the external world. Now, how to combine both? For an ordinary man, it may appear to be something of a puzzle. So, that verse which I recited earlier, it gives a solution to this problem. Saktaha karmani avidvamso yatha kurvanti bharada kuryat vidvan tatha asaktaha sigishu loka sangrikam. It gives, in the beginning, it gives the picture of two types of people, two types of professionals. One who is full of desire, very active, very efficient, very punctual, very enthusiastic about his work, a workaholic, but he is suffering from tension, stress, but he is successful in professional life. On the other hand, there is a devotee or a yogi or a karma yogi who may have a higher degree of all these qualities, except attachment, stress, and etc. He may be more efficient, more perfect, more punctual, and more successful. But mentally, he has got attitude, all this by the grace of God. That's for a devotee. Or if he's a karma yogi, mentally he can remain detached or non-attached from the work. Mentally he can surrender this result of his action to God. So, now this technique is beneficial because it saves you from all the problems associated with tension, stress, and all these things. So, if you practice this, you are benefited. But this is possible. For a devotee, it is easier because he can think well, I'm a devotee of God, but and God himself is the embodiment of all that is perfect. I'm talking about the Vishishta Advaitic and dualistic concept of God, not Advaita. I'm not talking about Advaita right now. From a Vishishta Advaitic or dualistic Dvaita point of view, God is the embodiment of all that is great and good and glorious and auspicious. Sagala guna kalyana nithi, Ramanuja defines God, you know, is the reservoir of all that is auspicious, good and great and glorious, all the qualities. That is Ramanuja's understanding of God. And devotion, bhakti, is as an upasana, as a path of spiritual practice, is more closely related to Ramanuja and school of thought. You know. So it is easy for you. As a devotee of God, I should not be inferior to anyone. Should not fail. That's it. It's possible. You don't. You can never find a great spiritual personality in the Vedantic pantheon who was effeminate, who was mediocre, who failed in things. You don't find. No, you don't find anyone. I think we have exceeded our time. So thank you. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.